The Complete Works of Winnie the Pooh. The immortal stories from the books Winnie the Pooh and The House at Pooh Corner, and poems from When We Were Very Young and Now We Are Six by Alan Alexander Milne. Presented for radio, unabridged, in 18 parts. Produced by Christopher Toyne and performed by Peter Dennis. Part 7, in which Piglet is entirely surrounded by water.
In which Piglet is entirely surrounded by water. It rained and it rained and it rained. Piglet told himself that never in all his life, and he was goodness knows how old, three was it all, or four, never had he seen so much rain. Days and days and days.
If only,
he thought as he looked out of the window,
I'd been in Pooh's house, or Christopher Robin's house, or Rabbit's house when it began to rain, then I should have had company all this time, instead of being here all alone, with nothing to do except wonder when it will stop.
And he imagined himself with Pooh saying,
did you ever see such rain, Pooh?
And Pooh saying, isn't it awful, Piglet? And Piglet saying,
I wonder how it is over Christopher Robin's way.
And Pooh saying, I should think poor old Rabbit is about flooded out by this time. It would have been jolly to talk like this, and really it wasn't much good having anything exciting like floods if you couldn't share them with somebody. For it was rather exciting. The little dry ditches in which Piglet had nosed about so often had become streams. The little streams over which he had splashed were rivers, and the river, between whose steep banks they had played so happily, had sprawled out of its own bed and was taking up so much room everywhere that Piglet was beginning to wonder whether it would be coming into his bed soon.
It's a little anxious,
he said to himself,
to be a very small animal entirely surrounded by water. Christopher Robin and Pooh could escape by climbing trees, and Kanga could escape by jumping, and Rabbit could escape by burrowing, and Owl could escape by flying, and Eeyore could escape by making a loud noise until rescued. And here am I, surrounded by water, and I can't do anything.
It went on raining, and every day the water got a little higher, until now it was nearly up to Piglet's window, and still he hadn't done anything.
There's Pooh, he thought to himself. Pooh hasn't much brain, but he never comes to any harm. He does silly things, and they turn out right. There's Owl. Owl hasn't exactly got brain, but he knows things. He would know the right thing to do when surrounded by water. There's Rabbit. He hasn't learned in books, but he can always think of a clever plan. There's Kanga. She isn't clever, Kanga isn't, but she would be so anxious about Roo that she would do a good thing to do without thinking about it. And then there's Eeyore. And Eeyore is so miserable anyhow that he wouldn't mind about this. But I wonder what Christopher Robin would do.
Then suddenly he remembered a story which Christopher Robin had told him about a man on a desert island who had written something in a bottle and thrown it in the sea. And Piglet thought that if he wrote something in a bottle and threw it in the water, perhaps somebody would come and rescue him. He left the window and began to search his house, all of it that wasn't underwater, and at last he found a pencil and a small piece of dry paper and a bottle with a cork to it. And he wrote on one side of the paper, Help Piglet me, and on the other side, It's me, Piglet, help, help. Then he put the paper in the bottle, and he corked the bottle up as tightly as he could, and he leant out of his window as far as he could lean without falling in, and he threw the bottle as far as he could throw. Splash! and in a little while it bobbed up again on the water, and he watched it floating slowly away in the distance until his eyes ached with looking. And sometimes he thought it was the bottle, and sometimes he thought it was just a ripple on the water which he was following. And then suddenly he knew that he would never see it again, and that he had done all that he could do to save himself.
"So now," he thought, "somebody else will have to do something. And I hope they will do it soon, because if they don't, I shall have to swim, which I can't. So I hope they do it soon."
And then he gave a very long sigh and said,
"Oh, I wish Pooh were here. It's so much more friendly with two."
When the rain began, Pooh was asleep. It rained and it rained and it rained, and he slept and he slept and he slept. He had had a tiring day. You remember how he discovered the North Pole? Well, he was so proud of this that he asked Christopher Robin if there were any other poles such as a bear of little brain might discover. "There's a South Pole," said Christopher Robin, "and I expect there's an East Pole and a West Pole, though people don't like talking about them." Pooh was very excited when he heard this, and suggested that they should have an expedition to discover the East Pole. But Christopher Robin had thought of something else to do with Kanga. So Pooh went out to discover the East Pole by himself. Whether he discovered it or not, I forget. But he was so tired when he got home that, in the very middle of his supper, after he had been eating for little more than half an hour, he fell fast asleep in his chair and slept and slept and slept. Then suddenly he was dreaming. He was at the East Pole, and it was a very cold pole with the coldest sort of snow and ice all over it. He had found a beehive to sleep in, but there wasn't room for his legs, so he had left them outside. And wild woozles, such as inhabit the East Pole, came and nibbled all the fur off his legs to make nests for their young. And the more they nibbled, the colder his legs got, until suddenly he woke up with a "ow!" And there he was, sitting in his chair with his feet in the water, and water all round him. He splashed to his door and looked out.
"This is serious," said Pooh. "I must have an escape."
So he took his largest pot of honey and escaped with it to a broad branch of his tree well above the water, and then he climbed down again and escaped with another pot. And when the whole escape was finished, there was Pooh sitting on his branch, dangling his legs, and there, beside him, were 10 pots of honey. 2 days later, there was Pooh sitting on his branch, dangling his legs, and there, beside him, were 4 pots of honey. 3 days later, there was Pooh sitting on his branch, dangling his legs, and there, beside him, was 1 pot of honey. 4 days later, there was Pooh. And it was on the morning of the 4th day that Piglet's bottle came floating past him, and with one loud cry of "Honey!" Pooh plunged into the water, seized the bottle, and struggled back to his tree again.
"Bother," said Pooh as he opened it. "All that wet for nothing. What's that bit of paper doing?"
He took it out and looked at it.
"It's a missage," he said to himself. "That's what it is. And that letter is a P, and so is that, and so is that. And P means Pooh. So it's a very important missage to me, and I can't read it. I must find Christopher Robin or Owl or Piglet, one of those clever readers who can read things, and they will tell me what this message means. Only I can't swim. Bother."
Then he had an idea, and I think that for a bear of very little brain, it was a good idea. He said to himself,
"If a bottle can float, then a jar can float. And if a jar floats, I can sit on the top of it, if it's a very big jar."
So he took his biggest jar and corked it up.
All boats have to have a name, he said. So I shall call mine the Floating Bear.
And with these words, he dropped his boat into the water and jumped in after it. For a little while, Pooh and the Floating Bear were uncertain as to which of them was meant to be on the top. But after trying one or two different positions, they settled down with the Floating Bear underneath and Pooh triumphantly astride it, paddling vigorously with his feet. Christopher Robin lived at the very top of the forest. It rained and it rained and it rained. But the water couldn't come up to his house. It was rather jolly to look down into the valleys and see the water all round him. But it rained so hard that he stayed indoors most of the time and thought about things. Every morning he went out with his umbrella and put a stick in the place where the water came up to. And every next morning he went out and couldn't see his stick anymore, so he put another stick in the place where the water came up to. And then he walked home again. And each morning he had a shorter way to walk than he had had the morning before. On the morning of the fifth day he saw the water all round him and knew that for the first time in his life he was on a real island, which was very exciting. It was on this morning that Owl came flying over the water to say,
"How do you do?"
to his friend Christopher Robin. "I say, Owl," said Christopher Robin, "isn't this fun? I'm on an island."
"The atmospheric conditions have been very unfavourable lately,"
said Owl. "The what?"
"It has been raining,"
explained Owl. "Yes," said Christopher Robin, "it has."
"The flood level has reached an unprecedented height."
"The who?"
"There's a lot of water about,"
explained Owl. "Yes," said Christopher Robin, "there is."
"However, the prospects are rapidly becoming more favourable. At any moment..."
"Have you seen Pooh?"
"No. At any moment..."
"I hope he's all right," said Christopher Robin. "I've been wondering about him. I expect Piglet's with him. Do you think they're all right, Owl?"
"I expect so. You see, at any moment..."
"Oh, do go and see, Owl, because Pooh hasn't got very much brain and he might do something silly, and I do love him so, Owl. Do you see, Owl?"
"That's all right," said Owl. "I'll go. Back directly."
And he flew off. In a little while, he was back again.
"Pooh isn't there,"
he said. "Not there?"
"He's been there. He's been sitting on a branch of his tree outside his house with 9 pots of honey. But he isn't there now."
"Oh, Pooh," said Christopher Robin, "where are you?"
"Here I am,"
said a growly voice behind him. "Pooh!" They rushed into each other's arms. "How did you get here, Pooh?" asked Christopher Robin when he was ready to talk again.
"On my boat," said Pooh proudly. "I had a very important message sent me in a bottle, and owing to having got some water in my eyes, I couldn't read it, so I brought it to you. On my boat."
With these proud words, he gave Christopher Robin the message. "But it's from Piglet," cried Christopher Robin when he'd read it.
"Isn't there anything about Pooh in it?"
asked Bear, looking over his shoulder. Christopher Robin read the message aloud.
"Oh, are those peas Piglets? I thought they were Pooh's."
"We must rescue him at once. I thought he was with you, Pooh. Owl, could you rescue him on your back?"
I don't think so,"
said Owl after grave thought.
"It is doubtful if the necessary dorsal muscles..."
"Then would you fly to him at once and say that rescue is coming? And Pooh and I will think of a rescue and come as quick as ever we can. Oh, don't talk, Owl. Go on quick." And still thinking of something to say, Owl flew off. "Now then, Pooh," said Christopher Robin. "Where's your boat?"
"I ought to say," explained Pooh as they walked down to the shore of the island, "that it isn't just an ordinary sort of boat. Sometimes it's a boat, and sometimes it's more of an accident. It all depends."
"Depends on what?"
"On whether I'm on the top of it or underneath it."
"Oh, well, where is it?"
"There,"
said Pooh, pointing proudly to the floating bear. It wasn't what Christopher Robin expected, and the more he looked at it, the more he thought what a brave and clever bear Pooh was. And the more Christopher Robin thought this, the more Pooh looked modestly down his nose and tried to pretend he wasn't. "But it's too small for two of us," said Christopher Robin sadly.
"Three of us with Piglet."
"Well, that makes it smaller still. Oh, Pooh Bear, what shall we do?" And then this bear, Pooh Bear, Winnie the Pooh, F.O.P., friend of Piglet's, R.C., rabbit's companion, P.D., pole discoverer, E.C. and T.F., Eeyore's comforter and tail finder. In fact, Pooh himself said something so clever that Christopher Robin could only look at him with his mouth open and eyes staring, wondering if this was really the bear of very little brain whom he had known and loved so long.
"We might go in your umbrella," said Pooh.
"Huh?"
"We might go in your umbrella," said Pooh.
"Huh?"
"We might go in your umbrella," said Pooh.
"Huh?" For suddenly Christopher Robin saw that they might. He opened his umbrella and put it point downwards in the water. It floated but wobbled. Pooh got in. He was just beginning to say that it was all right now when he found that it wasn't. So after a short drink, which he didn't really want, he waded back to Christopher Robin. Then they both got in together, and it wobbled no longer. "I shall call this boat the Brain of Pooh," said Christopher Robin. And the Brain of Pooh set sail forthwith in a southwesterly direction, revolving gracefully. You can imagine Piglet's joy when at last the ship came in sight of him. In after years, he liked to think that he had been in very great danger during the terrible flood. But the only danger he'd really been in was in the last half hour of his imprisonment, when Owl, who had just flown up, sat on a branch of his tree to comfort him, and told him a very long story about an aunt who had once laid a seagull's egg by mistake. And the story went on and on, rather like this sentence, until Piglet, who was listening out of his window without much hope, went to sleep quietly and naturally, slipping slowly out of the window towards the water until he was only hanging on by his toes, at which moment, luckily, a sudden loud squawk from Owl, which was really part of the story, being what his aunt said, woke the Piglet up, and just gave him time to jerk himself back into safety and say,
"How interesting. And did she?"
When, well, you can imagine his joy when at last he saw the good ship Brain of Pooh, Captain C. Robin, First Mate P. Bear, coming over the sea to rescue him. And as that is really the end of the story, and I am very tired after that last sentence, I think I shall stop there. The Old Sailor. There was once an old sailor my grandfather knew who had so many things which he wanted to do that whenever he thought it was time to begin, he couldn't because of the state he was in. He was shipwrecked and lived on an island for weeks, and he wanted a hat and he wanted some breeks, and he wanted some nets or a line and some hooks for the turtles and things which you read of in books. And thinking of this, he remembered a thing which he wanted for water, and that was a spring, and he thought that to talk to he'd look for and keep, if he found it, a goat or some chickens and sheep. Then, because of the weather, he wanted a hut with a door to come in by, which opened and shut, with a jerk which was useful if snakes were about. and a very strong lock to keep savages out. He began on the fish hooks, and when he'd begun, he decided he couldn't because of the sun. So he knew what he ought to begin with, and that was to find or to make a large sun-stopping hat. He was making the hat with some leaves from a tree when he thought,
I'm as hot as a body can be, and I've nothing to take for my terrible thirst, so I'll look for a spring, and I'll look for it first. Then he thought as he started, oh dear and oh dear, I'll be lonely tomorrow with nobody here.
So he made in his notebook a couple of notes.
I must first find some chickens, and, no, I mean goats.
He had just seen a goat, which he knew by the shape,
when he thought, but I must have a boat for escape. But a boat means a sail, which means needles and thread, so I'd better sit down and make needles instead.
He began on a needle, but thought as he worked that if this was an island where savages lurked, sitting safe in his hut he'd have nothing to fear, whereas now they might suddenly breathe in his ear. So he thought of his hut, and he thought of his boat, and his hat and his breeks, and his chickens and goat, and the hooks for his food, and the spring for his thirst. But he never could think which he ought to do first. And so in the end he did nothing at all, but basked on the shingle wrapped up in a shawl. And I think it was dreadful the way he behaved. He did nothing but basking until he was saved. Solitude. I have a house where I go when there's too many people. I have a house where I go when no one can be. I have a house where I go when nobody ever says no. When no one says anything, so there is no one but me. The Dormouse and the Doctor. There once was a dormouse who lived in a bed of delphiniums blue and geraniums red. And all the day long he'd a wonderful view of geraniums red and delphiniums blue. A doctor came hurrying round and he said,
Tut, tut, I am sorry to find you in bed. Just say 99 while I look at your chest. Don't you find that chrysanthemums answer the best?
The dormouse looked round at the view and replied, when he'd said 99, that he'd tried and he'd tried, and much the most answering things that he knew were geraniums red and delphiniums blue. The doctor stood frowning and shaking his head, and he took up his shiny silk hat as he said,
What the patient requires is a change,
and he went to see some chrysanthemum people in Kent. The dormouse lay there, and he gazed at the view of geraniums red and delphiniums blue, and he knew there was nothing he wanted instead of delphiniums blue and geraniums red. The doctor came back, and to show what he meant, he had brought some chrysanthemum cuttings from Kent.
Now these, he remarked, give a much better view than geraniums red and delphiniums blue.
They took out their spades, and they dug up the bed of delphiniums blue and geraniums red, and they planted chrysanthemums, yellow and white.
And now, said the doctor, we'll soon have you right.
The dormouse looked out, and he said with a sigh, I suppose all these people know better than I. It was silly, perhaps, but I did like the view of geraniums red and delphiniums blue. The doctor came round and examined his chest and ordered him nourishment, tonics, and rest.
How very effective, he said as he shook the thermometer, all these chrysanthemums look.
The dormouse turned over to shut out the sight of the endless chrysanthemums, yellow and white. How lovely, he thought, to be back in a bed of delphiniums blue and geraniums red.
The doctor said, Tut, it's another attack, and ordered him milk and massage of the back and freedom from worry and drives in a car, and murmured, How sweet your chrysanthemums are.
The dormouse lay there with his paws to his eyes and imagined himself such a pleasant surprise. I'll pretend the chrysanthemums turn to a bed of delphiniums blue and geraniums red.
The doctor next morning was rubbing his hands and saying, There's nobody quite understands these cases as I do. The cure has begun. How fresh your chrysanthemums look in the sun.
The dormouse lay happy. His eyes were so tight. He could see no chrysanthemums, yellow or white, and all that he felt at the back of his head were delphiniums blue and geraniums red. And that is the reason, Aunt Emily said, if a dormouse gets in a chrysanthemum bed, you will find, so Aunt Emily says, that he lies fast asleep on his front, with his paws to his eyes. Brownie. In a corner of the bedroom is a great big curtain. Someone lives behind it, but I don't know who. I think it is a brownie, but I'm not quite certain.
Nanny isn't certain, too.
I looked behind the curtain, but he went so quickly. Brownies never wait to say, "How do you do?" They wriggle off at once because they're all so tickly.
Nanny says they're tickly, too.
Come out with me. There's sun on the river and sun on the hill. You can hear the sea if you stand quite still. There's 8 new puppies at Roundabout Farm, and I saw an old sailor with only one arm. But everyone says, "Run along!" Run along, run along. All of them say, "Run along, I'm as busy as can be." Everyone says, "Run along, there's a little darling." If I'm a little darling, why don't they run with me? There's wind on the river and wind on the hill. There's a dark dead water wheel under the mill. I saw a fly which had just been drowned, and I know where a rabbit goes into the ground. But everyone says, "Run along!" Run along, run along. All of them say, "Yes, dear." They never notice me. Everyone says, "Run along, there's a little darling." If I'm a little darling, why don't they come and see?
The complete works of Winnie the Pooh, performed by Peter Dennis, based on the stage show Bother. Music composed and conducted by Don Davis. Piano played by Gloria Chang and clarinet by Charles Boito. Production recorded and mixed by Jeff Sykes at KCRW Santa Monica. Executive producer Jacqueline Delorier. Radio production directed by Christopher Toyne. A co-production of KCRW and Bother LA Production.
You've just heard the complete works of Winnie the Pooh on ICANN HD2 and ICANNradio.org. Unabridged recordings of the 4 Winnie the Pooh books can be found at danpour.com or by calling 1-855-369-6768.
That was Piglet is Entirely Surrounded by Water. You're listening to ICANN, and this is the complete works of Winnie the Pooh, airing every day at this time, right here on ICANNradio.org. You're listening to ICANN. Oregon Coast Aquarium is a journey from seafloor to shore, and we're offering a wave of new experiences. This summer, you can hone your climbing skills in their new nature play area. Then head over to their outdoor amphitheater to meet a cast of animal ambassadors, or view their headwaters feature to follow a raindrop's voyage from the mountains to the sea. You can plan your next adventure at aquarium.org.